Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots, the Spectator's political podcast. I'm Laura Prendergast and I'm today joined by Fraser Nelson and James Forsyth. So James, the business secretary, Greg Clark, has broken ranks to declare that no-deal Brexit will be, in his words, dire. How significant do you think this is?
I think this is another sign of how cabinet collective responsibility is essentially collapsed. Greg Clark came the other day from a cabinet meeting which had been discussing no deal planning to say in the House of Commons that no deal should not be contemplated. Obviously the government is contemplating it, that is why they are spending money on various bits of no deal contingency planning. And I think what you are seeing here from Greg Clark is a sign of what will come after Tuesday when, if as everyone expects, Theresa May's deal is voted down. Greg Clark's argument is you've got to take no deal off the table and reach across the House, in inverted commas. That essentially means reach out to Labour MPs to find a form of Brexit that could get through the House of Commons. That would inevitably be a softer Brexit than the one Theresa May is proposing. Now, if you remember, Greg Clark was a long-time advocate of the UK staying in the customs union. So I think he would be thoroughly relaxed about a form of Brexit that saw the UK stay in the customs union, for example, in an attempt to get Labour support. Now, it is worth noticing that if you go back to what Jeremy Corbyn set out at Labour conference last autumn, were his tests for the government. If you add a customs union into it, Theresa May's deal essentially passes those tests. So I mean, that what you are seeing here from Greg Clark is this. Now, there are obviously people in the cabinet who don't agree. You know, it is worth remembering that at last week's cabinet, Jeremy Hunt, the Foreign Secretary, explicitly said, in relation to people like Greg Clark and Amber Rudd and David Gawk, who were expressing their worries about no-deal Brexit, said, look, I'm more worried about no Brexit than no deal. And essentially, this is the split in the cabinet. Which worries you most? No Brexit or a Brexit that is not perceived as Brexit by the 17.4 million people who voted to leave, or no deal? And I think what you see from Greg Clark is the kind of first salvo in the war that is going to start at 8 o'clock next Tuesday after Theresa May's deal has been voted down, as cabinet ministers openly jostle for what course the government should follow.
Fraser, which worries you most, no deal or no Brexit?
I'm afraid to say that I don't think Theresa May's deal can be called Brexit in any meaningful sense. When you look at it, it is non-voting membership of the EU. And her deal proposes that we start talks to go into Brexit. It might well lead to Brexit, but it is not Brexit. I'm not quite sure how anybody could really genuinely say we will have left the EU on the 29th of March. I mean, you might say that sure, we won't face as much pressure to have the political, be under the political project. I can struggle to think of one practical way in that we won't be exactly the same as we were before. Maybe, well, James, you can help me.
Obviously, when we are in transition for that two-year period, we will be non-voting members of the EU. I mean, that is you can't dispute that. The crucial thing, I think, about what changes if Theresa May's deal passed and we left is the UK would be out of the EU, and unless something changed during the transition period, the UK would have to reapply to join. And I think that is crucial. Britain would be out of the political project.
Oh, yeah.
I also think the other thing about worth remembering is about even under the backstop, services which make up the vast bulk of the UK economy, the UK would have regulatory freedom in that area, the ability
Wait,
to do
this is the backstop we're talking
yeah.
about, but not what's happening on the 29th of
no,
March.
No, sure. I'm not saying that, but by nature of having a standstill transition, nothing is going to change. The whole point of it is that nothing changes for that period of time. You are non-voting members. I don't dispute that. But I think where it takes you to is out of the political project. Look, the Theresa May deal is, as we have discussed endless times in this podcast, is far from perfect. I think the question is, what are the alternatives to it in the House of Commons? I don't mean the House of Commons will allow no deal. And so I think all of the alternatives to Theresa May's deal at the moment are softer forms of Brexit. Now, Theresa May's form of Brexit is far from perfect, but I think it is unreasonable to say that it is not Brexit. It is Brexit. It is maybe not as clean or as clear a Brexit as I would like, but it is Brexit.
Right, so just to get this clear, in what way will we have left the EU after the 29th of March?
Well, obviously during the transition period, we will not have left the EU in a particularly meaningful way.
In which case, how is it Brexit?
No, because the transition period is time limited. The transition period can only go on until...
In other words, it will lead to Brexit at some point.
Yes, but
it isn't Brexit.
But that is a bit like saying, I've bought a plane ticket to go to America. I've gone through security at Heathrow Airport. But
you're certainly not at America.
I've bought my plane ticket. I'm on the way.
The planes are guaranteed to land. There is no security.
When the plane is on the runway, you are clearly heading to that place. We obviously haven't yet got to that place. I mean, I think we're slightly how many angels.
How do we know that it's not going to get diverted off into a different?
No, I just I disappear. No, like
I do not dispute that there is obviously a risk or a danger that if the government were to collapse between now and December 2020, because nothing would have changed, if a new government was elected that wished to take the UK back into the EU before December 2020, it would be an incredibly easy process for them to do that. I think the kind of crucial point is to get to January the 1st, 2021 or wherever, you know, even when you're in the backstop, right? Even under the backstop, rejoining the EU would be incredibly complicated and difficult. And that would mean that basically the UK, I think, would never end up rejoining the EU in the political project. I think if you look at all the other options of what will happen to this Brexit deal if it loses on Tuesday, they all involve this becoming a softer Brexit. They all involve the UK saying, even after the transition, we want to stay dynamically aligned with the EU on workers' rights, for example. So, you know, if hypothetically the EU said everyone across the EU is going to work a 35-hour week, we would end up by treaty having committed to do the same. Or you would end up in a situation where we would end up in a permanent customs union with the EU. You know, all of these things, if Theresa May's deal goes down, I don't think Theresa May wants no deal, and I don't think you could get no deal through the House of Commons. So what will happen is that the deal will become softened as Theresa May, who is a survivor, if nothing else, desperately tries to find a way to get a parliamentary coalition to get her deal through.
So I'm slightly changing my mind. I used to say, as James says now, no deal would not get through the House of Commons. But to say that, you need to work out how it's going to stop getting through the House of Commons. Something has to happen for that. So for example, there might be a vote of no confidence in the government. There might be a vote for a general election. They might vote to do a Norway option. All of these things are possible. But they would one of these things would have to supplant no deal.
And so if we leave and they haven't decided and they can't vote anything, then we automatically get no
deal.
If
you've got a majority for anything,
then we get no deal.
So the funny thing is, it doesn't really matter if Parliament doesn't back no deal or if there's no majority in Parliament for no deal. The only thing that matters is if there is a majority in Parliament for something else. That's the only way that it can prevent us going.
I think if there was going to be no deal, there would be a majority in Parliament for either extending Article 50 or revoking Article 50. I think if you look at what is happening with the Tory rebellions on the Cooper Amendment and the Grieve Amendment, what you see is, A, the numbers are striking. It's 20 or 17. That's larger than the previous Conservative rebellions we've seen. And also what's happening is the more rebellious ones are taking the others with them. So this is like kind of peer pressure at school. It's, you know, you break the rules once, it becomes easier to break the rules again. And before you know it, the model pupil is out smoking a spliff on the, behind the bike shed. This is the process that these MPs are being led through. People who don't normally rebel are rebelling, and then they will carry on doing so until that ultimate step of voting down your own government in a confidence motion doesn't seem like such a stretch to them. This is what is going on in Parliament right now. And I think one of the other things you have to appreciate is that lots of the people involved think that their political careers are coming to an end anyway. And so they'd rather go out with a bang.
So who are we talking about here?
So I think if you look down that list, you know, you've got Ed Vasey, right? Ed Vasey is not... I don't think Ed Vasey is going to stand again as an MP. You know, he's been a minister. He never made the cabinet. He's not going to be called back to the colours by the next prime minister. So the threat that normally a political party would hold, which is, we will deselect you, you'll never stand for our party again, loses lots of its potency with these people because they're not really planning on staying in politics anyway. You know, or Dominic Grieve. And I think Dominic Grieve knows full well that probably he's putting himself on a path that he wouldn't be selected to fight.
I guess Sarah Wilson, she's got selection issues. Nick Bowles, he's already at war with his constituency chairman. So there are a lot of these people who simply will not fear the wrath of voters because they're not really going to face voters again. And once you don't feel there is democratic pressure on you, I guess you do have a lot more leeway. So James is right. The question is, would you get enough of them?
You don't need very much. I mean, this is the point. Because it is a hung parliament, you need a handful of them to feel like this. And this is the
But in order to what? To change government?
To no confidence in government, yeah.
Which would lead to Jeremy Corbyn in power.
I think this is one of the other dangers. The Fixed Unparliament Act gives these people what might well be a false hope, but a hope that you could find some way to avoid having a Corbyn prime minister, because you've got this 2-week period where someone could try and find a majority in the House of Commons. So you could say, I'm going to no confidence this government, but I won't give my confidence to a Jeremy Corbyn government, and nor would the DUP for obvious reasons. And so if we sit tight, Corbyn, the Queen will send for Corbyn, Corbyn will try to form a government and fail. And then we could have a kind of government of Remainer National Unity with Hillary Benn as Prime Minister or whatever it is, with only one active. Now, this all might sound like...
Do you think we want to remain a national government?
No. This all might sound like fantasy politics. And it is fantasy politics in a way. But it doesn't matter if, as long as those Tory MPs who are going to no confidence the government believe in that fantasy.
Right. It's funny that normally, you know, the stages of grief are denial, anger, bargaining, depression and acceptance, right? It seems to me as if a Brexit is going exactly the reverse order. I mean, firstly, there was acceptance because, yeah, people, you won the referendum, fair enough, and people accepted it. Depression closely followed. Then you had the bargaining with the EU leading to the anger at the result of the bargaining, and finally the denial. And the denial seems to be over the fairly simple point that Parliament has voted for no deal, and unless they can agree to something else, that's what's going to happen. A lot of MPs just refuse to believe that. They have to actually get together and agree. It doesn't matter how much they shout at John Bercow, it doesn't matter how much they talk about another option. They need to build a coalition, a cross-party coalition for something, and unless they can pull off that feat, no deal's what we're going to get. Now, I wouldn't say the no deal is likely, and given, you know, how unpredictable British politics has been over the last 2 or 3 years, I promised myself I would exit the prediction business after the referendum, which I really didn't think would be won by Leave, and it was. So I'm not going to say that any outcome is likely, but if I'm going to be persuaded that no deal isn't going to happen, I'll have to see the scenario and think, well, that could. I guess everything is unlikely. Everything James has described sounds pretty unlikely. Imagine Tories getting together to put, you know, Dominic Grieve as Prime Minister or Corbyn. You might think that's crazy. But the crazy is happening all the time. And there's one rule of politics right now, is that nothing is so crazy it couldn't actually happen.
We consider the broad three options, right? So Theresa May's deal in some way, shape or form passes. No deal. Or Article 50 is extended to allow a second referendum. It is much easier to argue why any of those three things is not going to happen. But by March 29th, one of those three things has to have happened. And I think that is the point that people aren't understanding, which is there are these three options which you can individually argue why each of them is unlikely. And, you know, one can, you know, give us 1,000 words and one can do it right from one side of the paper only. But ultimately, one of those three things has to happen by March 29th, by definition.
Thank you, James and Fraser. And we've got a special offer for podcast listeners. You can get 12 issues of The Spectator for just £12, as well as a John Lewis voucher worth £20 if you go to spectator.co.uk/voucher. Thanks for listening, and do join us again tomorrow.